Dan.
And I'm Dan.
And welcome to the first episode of Dan by Dan,
a podcast where we air the dirty laundry of an open relationship and discuss our inability to agree on most things popular and cultural.
So basically a free form of therapy.
So we're going to start today by introducing each other. Dan is my boyfriend and he's 6 foot tall, ripped, hung, covered in tats. Oh, sorry, that's my other boyfriend. So Dan, well, he's a filmmaker, an atheist, a Nintendo lover, a pajama salesman, and he once slept with Josh Thomas's ex-boyfriend. Okay, so only 4 of those are true. But his film, Oh No Hair, was shown at the Young Cuts International Film Festival in 2013. It's about female body hair, which you'd expect from a gay man, right? He's a complete tech nerd and definitely an Android devotee. Well, I think. I usually tune out when he's talking about that stuff. His most attractive quality is definitely his mother, who once lectured me on convict homosexuality. For context, she is a historian. He's also an inspiring web developer and app designer, which is why I've invested in his startup potential as my future sugar daddy.
So for clarification there, I'm not a Nintendo lover. I love PlayStation. So now you know which one of those was false. Also, are you kidding? Android?
What do you mean?
Are you kidding?
Android, right?
No.
Android, Apple, they both start with A.
Oh, we will have to get into this later because it's not late enough in the podcast for this yet. So now I have to introduce you. Oh, what do I say about you? So Dan has an English degree, which means he's broke and has too much time on his hands. So that's why we're doing this podcast together. Dan grew up in the country and he went to a Catholic school.
Hang on. I was born in the city. Let's clarify that.
He was born in Melbourne and he lived there until he was 6. So Dan grew up in the country and went to a Catholic school, but now he's an inner city latte sipping bolshy atheist, a golden haired Catholic schoolboy turned raging sodomite. It's a tale as old as time. He's written a few divisive opinion pieces for samesame.com.au, and now he writes a gay food blog littered with innuendo called Inappropriately Baked. It's pretty funny, and it's raunchy, and it's full of simple recipes that you should definitely make. Oh, and yeah, he's my boyfriend, so there's that too. So we've lured you in under somewhat of a misnomer into listening to us.
Which is?
Well, we said we'd air the dirty laundry of an open relationship, but there's really nothing to air.
There's a lot of dirty laundry, but that's just because I'm lazy and haven't got around to it.
Yeah, so if you tuned in to hear two queens throwing shade at each other over who screwed the pool boy this week, then I'm really sorry to disappoint you so early in the show.
He was a very cute pool boy, though.
We don't have a pool boy. So the point is that our unconventional relationship is actually really as conventional as one could imagine.
Is it that conventional?
Well, the rules might not be, but the outcome is certainly the same as everybody else's relationships. It's still mostly just nights in front of the TV cuddling with really no more sex than anybody else has.
Boring, resentful.
No,
not marriage.
There's none of that. Like, to put it this way, we have a very healthy relationship. In 2 years, we've never had an actual real couples fight. We just fight over politics and movies and TV shows.
And boy, do we fight over politics and movies and TV shows.
Oh, especially the TV shows. I think there's 2 shows in history that both of us watched together, and that would be House of Cards and...
Orange is the New Black?
Orange is the New Black and The Fall, most recently. Although The Fall, I kind of fell out of. Yeah, I haven't kept up on. Yeah, Dan's definitely...
Just to put it in context, Dan still watches Glee.
Okay, I gave the first episode of season 6 a good go. I don't think if I can continue watching it, but yes.
I gave it 45 seconds.
45 seconds. Yep. It had a really good
actually,
moral.
Actually, no, I'll give you... I did give it a little bit longer, about 2 minutes and 30 seconds, and then when the star fell off the caravan, I was like, no, I'm out. I'm done.
It had a great moral this week, though.
Which was?
Follow your dreams until it gets too hard, and then just give up and go home.
Yeah, that's a fantastic moral.
I'm going to tell our children that.
That's what we should be teaching children, yeah.
Absolutely.
So why are we doing a podcast, babe?
Because we're Gen Y narcissists, put simply.
Pretty much, yeah.
And in lieu of actual friends to listen to our
opinions...
Hey,
we've got like 2 friends.
Yeah, exactly. And they actually have jobs, so they're really busy and don't have time to see us.
They're not art students.
No, they're law students. They are actually going to...
No, they're actually lawyers or...
Already, exactly. They already have careers and bank accounts that aren't showing 0.00.
So we don't actually have much of an idea of what we're doing with the podcast.
No, we're just going to have a bit of fun with it, and each week bring you different segments.
Different rants.
Talk some movies, have some rants, talk politics, talk TV, talk music, talk pop culture.
Disagree on everything.
Hopefully agree on some things.
Maybe.
And maybe you'll want us to join you on your morning commute, or your daily run, or your car ride home from work. Who knows?
Just don't sue us when you throw the iPhone away, because you're so sick of listening to our voices.
Or angry with our...
We're now going to play the Nicholas game, which is a game that we've devised where we rate everyone in popular culture against Nicholas. For those of you who don't know who Nicholas is, you can find him at Nicholas on Twitter, and he's basically a god of a man.
Yeah, so basically Dan has just devised this segment so that he could name drop Nicholas and hopefully, God willing, get his attention.
It's true, but it's going to be really awkward now, isn't it? I've mentioned that he's amazing.
Yeah, but amazing. What else have you got to say about
it? Okay, so Nicholas, he's a HIV advocate and a writer. He writes for a bunch of people, Junkie, and so forth. He's been on Q&A this year. He's a sex positivist, so he loves sex. And, I mean, he's recently become a porn star, which is a massive bonus. Speaking of massive things.
Oh, we had to go there so early in the podcast.
I mean, he does have something else that's appealing, doesn't he?
Well, the porn stash.
Yeah, the massive porn stash. That must be what we're talking about.
That's absolutely what we were referring to. So, Dan has a huge man crush on Nicholas.
It's true. I think it started when he was interviewed by Dandy magazine, and he made this quote, "If you tell a young guy that he should aspire to a picket fence instead of a fist up his ass, eventually he'll just sit on the picket fence and do himself some damage."
Wow, so how many minutes are we in and we've already referenced fisting? I think we might actually get people to listen to this. This could be good for us.
And it doesn't have video, so we're sparing them.
The torture of seeing our faces is what you're trying to say. It's true. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. That makes me feel wonderful. So basically, the Nicholas game works by we talk about six individuals from the week. We rate them on a scale of awesomeness from zero being a total douchebag to six being Nicholas level of awesomeness.
But I don't. Are we going to find someone that can meet that level of awesomeness?
Well, that's the point. Every week, you know, we're going to try and aim for a six, but we may never find that.
I mean, I didn't. I settled, so might just have to settle with the podcast.
So I'll let Dan introduce our lucky candidates for this week.
Okay, so up first we have German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and we've nominated her this week.
Oh, the Merkin.
Because she's come out and made a statement about net neutrality, hasn't she?
Yeah, so this is my field of expertise with net neutrality. So the quick nerd indulgence here. So internet neutrality is this idea that the internet should be free and open and equal, much as it is now. And there's this big debate going on at the moment that the internet shouldn't have every lane being exactly the same speed for everyone, that we should have these kind of high speed lanes for certain services and lower speed lanes for consumers, etc. And there's a lot of arguments for and against and a huge amount of debate going on in political fields. It's not very exciting. So we're not really reading about it in your average media source at the moment.
Well, I'm not reading about it, so...
Yeah, exactly. So Angela Merkel has come out and she has said that she's actually not for net neutrality. She wants to have a specific fast lane and then...
Is that for my Range Rover?
I'm getting my nerd on here. She wants to have a fast lane. Now, in her vision, I can sort of understand. She wants a fast lane so that we can champion scientific discoveries by offering a sparse internet for them and it not being hindered by everybody else trying to use the internet and for medical operations and those kinds of things that you need to be able to do knowing that your internet could not be affected because everybody jumps online at the same time like we do now and suddenly your internet slows down after 5:30 p.m.
So basically she wants a fast lane for porn.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the problem is that her intentions may all be very well and good, but it wouldn't work if just Germany takes on this idea of net neutrality and implements this fast lane. It's only going to work on a global scale. And the problem is that in America, the way they're talking about this is that companies are going to use net neutrality to charge us more. It's open for all kinds of corruption. That's the problem. So her intentions may be honest and honorable, but I just can't see it actually coming.
But it could be a good thing, because what we could get is you pay for the mainstream lane where you get rubbish like Facebook, and then you get a free hipster lane where we get all the good content.
Yeah, but that's fine. But the point of the internet is that it's free and open for anybody to access anything they want. So the hipsters will just keep talking to the hipsters, and the bigots will keep just talking to the bigots in their chat rooms, and no one will learn. No one.
So it's basically just an internet version of ghettoization.
Yeah. Exactly. A really good way to think about it is just to think about it as pay TV. So you get your basic package, which probably will have Facebook and all of that in it. But then you got to pay for your video package. So then you get your Netflix and your Stan. And I hate that name. It's got to be said that is a terrible product name. And your Quick Clicks and your YouTube and all of that is bundled in one. And then you've got to get your social package.
Okay, babe. I think we better move on to our next candidate before they all tune out.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Well, actually, we've brought up Facebook, so we should probably bring up our next contender, which is Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
And why have we got Mark Zuckerberg on our list this week?
Because he's discovered this fandangled, new, awesome technology that's going to change all of our lives. And it is...
the book.
The book. So he said that noticing that books allow you to fully explore a topic and immerse yourself in a deeper way than most media today. Really prophetic words from Mark Zuckerberg there, right?
They are. I mean, my arts degree might be worth something now that Mark Zuckerberg has made that statement.
So thank you, Zuckerberg, for really bringing this profound innovation to the rest of the world.
I think that Zuckerberg is not actually the first person to recently discover the book. IKEA actually discovered the book.
Oh, yeah.
Last year. Have you seen that video?
Your favourite viral video.
The book. If you haven't seen it, we'll put a link onto our blog page. But basically, IKEA have made their catalogue into a book. And you can actually touch the book.
And it doubles in size when you open it. It's
pretty revolutionary, really.
It's basically 3 minutes of dad jokes.
Yeah.
Bringing things back to a more local level for a moment, and our third candidate is Campbell Newman.
Australia's favourite premier. I think we can agree on that, can't we? That...
yeah, like, he's the worst of the worst.
Yeah, he's the premier of the worst premier. He has called for an early election, hasn't he?
So he literally just came back from Christmas and was like, you know what, let's go to an election, and has called it for only 31 days out, which is the legal limit, and given everybody 5 days to get on the electoral roll. So it's a really sneaky, squirmy little move. It makes me so angry, because there's all these young people that have gone off on holidays that haven't obviously organised to enrol to vote, because it's not exactly on the horizon for them right now, and suddenly it's just been called and they've been given absolutely no time. So he knows that he doesn't have the youth vote, and he's doing this to try and cut them out of the picture.
If it pulls off that he loses the election, which is pretty unlikely given the amount of seats that he has.
Yeah, Labour have like 8 seats or something insane in the Queensland Parliament. It's terrifying.
Yeah, but hopefully, I mean, at least if there's a swing away from Campbell Newman, we might get some benefit coming out of this.
Maybe a little bit of a power balance back in the Queensland Parliament. Yeah. So that could be good. I mean, it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. But he's still just a really offensive man.
He may get our zero award today.
You know, he sent the police to Catherine Devaney's house.
Really?
Did you read about that?
No, I didn't see that one. He sent
them to her house. She's just republished the article in light of the election and, you know, him coming back on the news. And she published some tweets sort of joking. She was joking about killing him, but, you know, she gets that kind of language directed at her on a daily basis from men. And he sent the chief of police as an operation to her house, who sent 2 men out to, and it was just her teenage boy who answered and left a card. She said she and the cops who came had a great laugh about it as well. But he sent the police to her house because she tweeted about him.
And that's one sensitive premier.
Yeah. So I think we can all see where he's going to be on the Nick Hollis scale at the end of this.
Speaking of sensitive people, on a more positive note, we actually have Nicole Kidman and Jimmy Fallon together
yeah.
as our next candidate, Well, Nicole Kidman, really. But Jimmy Fallon gets props because if you haven't seen the video, Nicole Kidman basically goes onto his show and reveals to him that they once went on a date that he wasn't quite aware of. It was apparently a terrible date.
He really went bright red on air.
Yeah, I mean, sitting there playing video games in your pajamas. That's basically what Dan does on all of our dates.
In front of Nicole Kidman. And this wasn't like in the 80s before she was a huge megastar. This was 2004. This is post-Tom Cruise single Nicole Kidman era. She was a megastar. And he served her some leftover takeaway from the fridge.
And I don't met know, but, her in but his tracky dacks. What do you think is worse? Leftover takeaway Chinese or what I served you on our first date? Which was Vegemite chicken.
Vegemite chicken, people. Just let that sink in for a moment. The first meal he ever cooked me, Vegemite chicken. Literally a chicken breast just coated in Vegemite and thrown in the oven. Oh, and you did also serve me leftover pizza.
Oh, yeah, leftover pizza. That was a real
balanced meal there. Actually a fair introduction into the rest of your cooking skills.
But you would have to say that even with my Vegemite chicken, I would be a better date than our final candidate, wouldn't I?
Yes, well, of course, he had to be on this list this week. And we have the always lovely, always understandable Justin Bieber.
Yeah, the teen star turned now Calvin Klein model.
Oh, now I know there's something that a lot of gay men won't be doing from now on. Buying Calvin Klein underwear. But in the reverse, I think a lot of gay guys will now be buying Lynx hair gel.
Yeah, but I don't know. Isn't there supposed to be this stereotype about gay men having taste? Because Lynx hair gel.
Yeah, but they put gay kissing in their ad. And you know we all fall to our knees the moment a company.
Yes, I'm going to rush out with my pink dollar.
Yeah, and acknowledges in our sexuality. Yeah. We must get down on our hands and knees and pray to our corporate gods.
Did they get married in the ad?
No, you just met out with him in a Casablanca-style clip.
That's very early 2000s.
Yeah, it was not great. But anyway, back to Bieber.
Oh, yeah. So our little Canadian...
I guess it goes... They've always had the kind of bad boys. You know, they kept comparing him to Mark Wahlberg. And Mark was a bit of a bad boy at the time.
We're talking about a tweenage star, though. Can he ever really be a bad boy? Isn't that the whole problem with Bieber, that he's tried to be this bad boy, but really he's just a little boy?
It's just funny. Yeah, it is. It's just funny. I know. It's troubling to watch because, you know, influence on children and all that, but really.
Okay, so where are we going to rate them? How do these five compare to Nicholas? Is anyone going to take that Nicholas crown?
Well, on level of how much we talked about her, I feel like we should give it to Merkel because I couldn't shut up about her for like 5 minutes. So sorry about that, guys.
She has created debate, but I think Kidman has to take the prize. Kidman has to be the closest. Because
I'm giving her a 4.
Giving Kidman a 4?
I'm giving Kidman a 4.
So Merkel gets the 5.
No. Do we have to give them like one? We can't give them the same ranking.
I guess we could have equal 4th and just not give it 5.
Yeah, look, because I think she was, I could think it was fun and it was carefree and all of that, but it's not groundbreaking. She's not starting any kind of cultural conversation here. It was just a good YouTube tidbit.
Okay. So then we've got places 1, 2, and 3, the lowest places, between Campbell Newman, Justin Bieber, and Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, look, Zuckerberg has to have the 3. He's just reading books. And you can't knock a guy for trying to help people read more and encouraging
and
that.
And as a writer, I'm all for that. I might actually earn a penny, so...
Exactly. He's not the new Oprah. Let's not get carried away, people. But, you know, he's done far douchier things in the past, so let's give him a pass on this one. He definitely deserves a 3.
Okay, so Newman or Bieber?
Can we give Newman the 0? Is that allowed?
Can we give minus points?
Oh, well, I want to. Is it too early in the game to give out minus points?
Maybe we'll just scratch Newman for being a failure.
Yeah, well, hopefully the whole state of Queensland does too, but...
But I am going to give Bieber points for the tats. I think Bieber might scrape in a 1 for the tats and the pecs.
Yeah. Look, the boy's buff. I'll give him that. He's not ugly by any means.
Is he buff or Photoshop buff?
He's still buff.
Yeah, he's still
buff. We have seen him shirtless. Yes, he is scrawnier than that, but he's still only like, I don't know, 21 or whatever. He's barely finished puberty. We can't expect him to be a hunk of a man.
No, I mean, you finished puberty a while ago and you're still not a hunk of a man, so.
Yeah, thank you for that. And you still can't grow proper facial hair. So something really unfathomable happened this week. Something that hasn't happened in a long, long, long time. And I'm not talking about us having sex.
Well, that hasn't happened in a long time either, but...
I read a book. Well, I read a few short stories as part of a book.
I let him start off lightly with a few short stories.
Yeah.
Didn't want to make it too hard to throw you in the deep end.
And they came from the book Merciless Gods by Christos...
Chalkas.
Chalkas, thank you. I'm glad I didn't make a fool of myself for trying to pronounce that one.
And the way that I got Dan to read these stories was not Mark Zuckerberg's inspiration, unfortunately. But it was their titles, because the three short stories were called...
Porn 1, Porn 2, and Porn 3. But you tricked me.
I did trick you, didn't I?
Oh my God. They were the most unerotic stories I've ever read in my life.
They were pretty dark, weren't they? He certainly doesn't shy away from getting into the gritty stuff.
His descriptions are so visual and visceral. Like, I was really drawn in to his writing. It's a really good writing, and it's really vivid. It's really vivid. It's not full of unwieldy long words that make you have to think. It's just succinct and to the point, short sentences that really hit you hard.
Extremely well-edited writing.
Yeah.
Very, very well-edited. But we should give a brief synopsis of what happens in the stories.
Yeah, so in Porn 1, basically the story covers a woman in a video store who's looking for a particular gay porn video. And then we find out later in the story it's because her son moved over to America and died when he in the porn industry because he got HIV. And so it's just her watching this porno of her son, and it's really...
And there's religious overtones in there because she's quite disturbed.
Absolutely. They had trouble accepting the son's... Well, they didn't accept the son's homosexuality. It's so sad watching her watch her own son get fucked.
It is quite sad, yeah. And then in Porn 2...
which is the worst of the three.
It's basically about... it's about porn stars, but it's very, like, gritty look at the porn industry. And it's about two desperate...
Street kids.
Street junkies, basically, aren't they?
In Sydney.
And get sort of drawn into the porn industry because they're so desperate.
Blackmailed into the porn industry, essentially, yeah. To try and pay off drug debt. Yeah.
And it's very... Very dark and sad.
Incredibly dark and sad. And again, there was these undertones of a lack of acceptance in their lives for their sexuality. Then in Porn 3...
Well, I think here we should, in case people do want to follow up and read these, we shouldn't give away too much in this one. But basically, it's got a lot of religious overtones and it's about someone... An encounter. It's set in an on-site sex venue. And
oh, that's such a nice name for it.
What would you call it?
A sauna.
A sauna. Well, that doesn't sound too bad.
No, if you're in Europe, but in Australia, a sauna only means one thing.
It's true. But I think part of what I wanted to discuss from these stories was the way that Chalkas uses sex. I mean, it's great to see such vivid, honest representations of sex, particularly gay sex, in literature, but it does make me wonder the way that he does these stories, whether he is being sex positive or sex negative.
Yeah, I was really had mixed reactions to that as well. So he was sort of making us think about the actors behind the film and what were they going through and stuff.
There's a lot of heavy moral sort of overtones to these stories,
but
isn't there?
It's like, would he have written the same story about a mother viewing just her son doing normal acting, knowing that he was a homosexual, knowing that he had HIV, knowing that he'd been rejected by his family and they hadn't spoken in 4 years? Would he have written that story? Because what's going on behind the scene is the same. There's this implication that because they're doing porn, it's wrong, it's immoral, and they were driven to that by these actions of the people around them and this...
But I don't think that that's necessary. I mean, I know there are other sides to the porn industry, but I don't think it's an untrue representation of some of what happens in the porn industry. But it does make me question, you need to kind of, I guess, distill what is the morality of the characters and what's the morality of the author, and... You know, is he just telling stories that are based on reality and therefore just putting sex out there for discussion? Or is he trying to kind of suggest a morality to sex in general.
Yeah, it'd be. I don't know about anything about Solkus himself, but I mean, it's sort of the, especially the third story, Pawn 3, was a lot like the film Head On, which...
Yeah, which is based on his novel Loaded.
Yeah, which is a really good film. It's made in 1998, directed by Anna Kokkinos, so you should definitely look it up. It's a good Australian film that's sort of been lost to history, but I digress. He has a definite sort of grappling with the idea of culture and homosexuality. Mm. So, especially.
But then I think if you look at The Slap, which is another of his novels and was made into a TV
definitely the most miniseries, well-known.
He does have a way of just dealing with morality in general that's looking at the way people perceive morality and their interactions with each other. I don't think that he's necessarily suggesting that it's right, but just exposing that kind of side to Australian society.
He definitely has something to say about God and homosexuality and the repressing of these desires in the pursuit of this religious ideal and what your religion has told you. And I don't think he has anything good to say about that.
No.
That the outcome of that, it will always be negative, will always produce really horrific results for the individuals involved.
But I think they're good stories to have out there and great to see something that is challenging that.
It's good writing, too. It will draw you in the first page. So if you're like me and you haven't bothered to read anything because TV shows on Netflix are just so much easier to put your brain to, then try these out. They're short and they're visceral and they're quick and they sort of punch you in the gut in a way that is not enjoyable, but is an experience you should have.
And if you're like me and you actually read the rest of the collection, there are some fantastic plot twists in there to really play with you.
So don't worry, we're going to move on to film now, something that you will all understand and that I feel a lot more comfortable talking about.
Next up, we're going to talk about a film that we saw recently, which was a Hungarian independent film called Land of Storms. And, well, it was really just soft gay porn, wasn't it?
No, I mean, it was Land of Hot Men. That's for sure, but I didn't...
Lots of shirtless hot men running around in the rain.
But a lot like the stories before, I did not find it at all erotic or arousing.
Really?
No.
It was definitely my sort of... I had to, like, give it a few minutes before we left the cinema.
Oh, so basically the story just follows a young soccer player who sort of flakes out in his first game. So he goes back to his family home where he's alone, sort of in this tiny little country town on a block of land, and he decides to do it up. And he meets up with a local youth from the town, and they sort of start this really
intense sort of relationship that they build while they're repairing the house.
Exactly, but full of repressed feelings. So they're deeply religious, and homosexuality is not something that's appropriate in their community or part of their upbringing. So there's so much rage and hatred going on in this relationship and so much lust and desire at the same time.
So it just creates really, like, hot, violent sex.
No, because I never knew whether at the end of it they were actually going to fuck one another at the end of the scene or bash one another up.
And isn't that the best sex when you don't know what's going
on? No, that's not arousing to me. My heart was pounding the whole film, which is a testament to the filmmakers, but that was the only place blood was rushing to.
But I think it was still a really beautifully made film.
Yeah, there was some gorgeous landscapes. It was a part of the world that you don't often get to experience on film, so it's always fantastic to see.
And also very subtle. It didn't throw things in your face, as you would expect from a European film, really.
Yeah, and it had a lot more in common with Australian film than, say, British or American film.
Definitely that slow build sort of...
Slow build.
Brooding.
Long shots with very little dialogue, trying to show a lot of stuff just through facial interactions and body movement.
And I think also the setting, I mean, we're talking about small town, rural communities, is pretty common theme in Australian film as well.
Absolutely. Now, on small towns, I think the film definitely had something to say about the potential toxic nature of growing up in a small town if you're in the slightest bit different to what the town expects from you.
I guess I agree in terms of the film's narrative, but I don't think that that's necessarily a fair portrayal of small towns. I think they have the potential to go either way. Certainly they can be very insular in their understandings of, you know, what is a life experience and limiting in terms of sexuality. But I think small towns and particularly small communities can also go the opposite way. When someone does come out, they can, that intimacy of those environments can actually be a very supportive place to be, whereas the city in contrast, can have a lot of diversity but still be quite isolating.
But we certainly seem to hear a lot of stories about people having to leave their hometowns because even if it's not violent, it's not welcoming to them to be openly gay there.
Yeah, I think in some small towns, but I do, you know...
Every second gay guy you meet in Melbourne is from a country town. They've come there to get away from it.
Yeah, I don't know that that's a narrative that's just unique to gay people, though. There's certainly a lot of young people from small towns who just want to get out and see the world.
True, and I guess that's what I'm trying to say. If you've got different political views or you want to dress a different way, you leave, and I don't think that's a good... indictment.
But I don't necessarily believe that the city is actually... the city might have more diversity, but in my experience, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's more inclusive. It can be very isolating in that. Everyone just accepts it, but ignores it.
Perhaps you're right. There's a myth to the beauty and the wide open nature of the city, but I definitely with this film...
Oh, it's certainly, yeah.
It was a really tragic tale to watch, and this town just was so horrible to these two poor young men. And it has a really quite a shocking twist ending, which we certainly won't give away, but...
Well, I think the question we do have to answer, though, is film versus fiction.
Yeah, as inspired by Zuckerberg this week, as apparently fiction and the written word exposes you to content in a way that nothing else can, we thought we'd have a little debate at the end.
So did Chalkers do it better than Cersei?
The film student in me... really, really wants to vote for the film, but in reality, I actually have to give it to the book. Both of them talk about sex and repressed homosexuality and the dark side of that, and they both have religious overtones and the harm that can do on individuals. And yet I felt that Chalkers really drove it home with his use of language more.
And yet the literature student in me actually has to say that Chalkers drove it home too much and kind of punched me in the face. So I actually think that Cersei did it better because it was a bit more subtle.
What? You're going for the film and I'm going for the book? This is horrible. No, this is not the way this is supposed to go.
This is not how our arguments usually end.
No, this is completely the opposite. I just thought Chalkers really made me think, and Land of Storms... made me kind of like what I was saying before about country towns, kind of made me give it a, well, I've seen it all before, I just haven't seen it in Hungarian.
Yeah, I don't know, I just felt that Chalkers, I love his daring and his ability to just go straight into things with no holds bars, his kind of fearless writing. But at the same time, sometimes it feels like he's just throwing you in the deep end, punching you in the face for the sake of sensationalism.
Well, Chalkers wins for me. So there you go. We promise that we disagree, and we certainly have disagreed on this one.
And there's our dirty laundry for the week. So now if you want to see more of our public arguments, you
you've got to say thank you. Thanks for listening. People like to be thanked for doing nothing.
Oh, really? So, okay, well, I guess thanks for listening. And if you want to see more of our public arguments, you can go follow us on Twitter. You can find me at Aiden C. Delaney. That's Aiden with an A and Delaney with an EY.
And you can find me at Dan Lives Here.
And go check out our Tumblr page. There you can find links to our podcasts as we pop them up.
DanByDanPodcast.tumblr.com.
And we'll also post links there to all of the things that we talk about.
And absolutely, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.